You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello and welcome to The Orthodox Nationalist. This, of course, is Matthew Raphael Johnson. Today's date is on the 15th of February, 2025. Thank everyone. I really appreciate the support, the donations that I've received. My books continue to sell. I have so many in the hopper, including one on the Ukraine war. I don't even know what to do with myself. This is all self-inflicted torture, but I appreciate all my friends out there, and don't think that I don't notice. And the same thing goes for my Patreon subscribers. Today, we're going to talk about something a little bit less upbeat, something that's not, it is current events, but it's been going on for some time. And I call it the icon of the black void. That is to say, the Jewish persecution of the Orthodox Church in Ukraine. I've brought this up many times in the past. I think I dedicated a Daily Nationalist to it at least a year and a half ago. But I want to spend some more time on it tonight, because we'll be talking about Nuke Azadia. We're talking about Israel, Syria. We're talking about Ukraine. Jews, the battle between Jews and Russia, between Khazaria and Orthodoxy, is at the center of all of these. Now, what do I mean by the black void? Some of you may remember this disgusting gesture. It was in 2023 when Zelensky met with this vile pope. Well, he claims to be pope in Rome. And it was an icon. It wasn't an icon. It was just like a cartoon of the Virgin Mary with the black void where Christ should have been. For some reason, it's called Loss 2022-58. The artist is Oleksiy Ravica, which sounds Jewish. I'm not sure if he is or not. Apparently, this has been painted on the remains of a bulletproof vest. That's supposed to be dramatic, I guess. But this is what Zelensky brought to Rome. Him going to Rome a couple years ago was very important, since although the Uniate Church in Western Ukraine is very small, they are vociferous. But it was very clear what Zelensky's trying to say here. This was actually taken from the Ivoron icon. That was the one that was desecrated by the atheists. But it's pointing to the role of the Jews in the expectation of the Antichrist. He was giving a clear signal to the whole world about what Nuke Azadia is. And his own persecution of the church in Ukraine reflects it. And of course, he's not an independent actor. He takes orders. Now, let me give you the this idiot artist. This is the official explanation. This icon was meant to symbolize a loss of Ukrainian children in the conflict. But for the head of the Roman Catholic Church and all Christians, the loss of the baby Jesus means the loss of the Messiah, the meaning of the very institution of the church, the erasure of Christ from the cross and the rejection of his resurrection. When I read that, I'm almost convinced this guy's a Jew, because that doesn't make any sense. I can't make any sense out of it. That's a superficial, pseudo-intellectual explanation for the Goyim. None of that would have anything to do with a deliberate erasure just of Christ. No Jew could ever carry an actual icon, let alone treat it with any kind of reverence. There's no connection between blacking out Christ and just him and the lost children. Something, by the way, only the Israelis are really known for. It's a deliberately stupid explanation. It causes just more cognitive dissonance in the normie Orthodox world. And of course, this demonic pope accepted it as if it were some religious work of art. And in the picture, the image for this lecture is, I had trouble getting a large enough version of that pseudo-icon. But I remember it when it occurred. I kind of forgot about it. But as I was putting this together over the last week, it came up again. He couldn't be any more obvious. He couldn't be any more in your face about it. Not only do we have things like that, but we have, and it's acceptance by this ridiculous man in Rome. But I don't envy Catholics who are in communion with Rome. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do the mental gymnastics to justify him as being a Christian, let alone having this office. But the other thing, of course, is his open persecution of the Orthodox Church on Ukrainian soil. The Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I guess it was last year, published a document of about 30 pages. It's called On the Illegal Actions of the Kiev Regime Against the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. The concept is that this is a genocide based on religion, in the sense, I mean, this is part of the UN definition. You don't have to murder people to, you know, it's a wiping out of a culture. It's just a desire to destroy the majority faith in Ukraine, the second largest Orthodox country in the world, which is currently being depopulated of just those Orthodox men, the best that Ukraine had to offer. Crime against humanity. Well, the regime has its own definition of what counts as human. You know how you could tell a normie from someone who understands? A normie is going to say something like, I don't understand. The State Department is so concerned about human rights. How could they possibly allow something like this to go on and subsidize it? That's how you know someone hasn't been initiated yet. Someone is still on the outside. In other words, they really believe in the propaganda that these principles are universal and are accepted in their universal form. They are not. The same people who say, who chastise, you know, someone working for the New York Times for being biased and being leftist. Yet they know that. They know that. These people are a lot of things, but they're not stupid. What do you think you're getting across to them? They're well aware that they're promoting an agenda. That's why they're there. Of course the attacks on the church are subsidized. They've always been. Taking the rhetoric for actual reality. It explains, you know, it's your typical American who has not made that jump across the Rubicon. Making that jump across the Rubicon in this regard is difficult because it would also force you to deal with the question of the Jews, and that is also extremely difficult. The invasion of Ukraine, Eastern Ukraine, that's not merely being conducted against this Jewish and very anti-Russian regime as such, but against the West in general, this anti-human ideology, an ideology that has no real principles. About 20% prior to the invasion, 20% of the infrastructure of the Donbass was destroyed. The shelling of, almost by definition, civilian centers. That was the point. They were well aware of what they were doing. The Americans who were teaching them how to do this were well aware of what they were doing. You can't upbraid them for this. They knew it. In fact, they were signing, they did this too in Yugoslavia, signing the shells and the bombs, you know, F Orthodoxy and whatever, Happy Easter. They're well aware of it. Now, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Russia was being very diplomatic about all of this. They say, for example, for many years, the Kiev authorities have been actively pursuing a course in Ukraine to liquidate the canonical Ukrainian Orthodox Church discriminate against its clergy, persecute it, and its religious citizens. Well, the diplomatic way of putting it, that's what you would expect. Less diplomatically is that this is just another Jewish pogrom against Orthodoxy, one subsidized and promoted by the regime. One thing I noted, even after at least two and a half decades of rough and blatant anti-Russian state propaganda, that it softened a little bit under Yanukovych. The majority of Orthodox people in Ukraine belong to this Russian church. I'm not going to get into the Moscow Patriarchate. We're long past that when people are getting murdered here. I reported the Kiev Institute of Sociology, this was before the war, that even in Western Ukraine, the majority do not have anti-Russian feelings. I'm not sure why they would, except pure propaganda. And now, when they're not permitted anything else but pure propaganda, people go to jail for supporting the Russian cause, even if just verbally. That may have changed, but clearly, even until this persecution, and it's the reason for this persecution, that they maintained their loyalty to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church under Moscow. Now, they have a lot of detail in this 30 pages about the crimes against Orthodoxy in Ukraine. Seizures of churches, direct violence, of course, physical violence, legislative discrimination. Maybe one day it can become evidence in a trial of some of these people once the war is over. That's a little naive, but it might be nice to consider. There's an archpriest named Andrei Kachiev from Western Ukraine, from Lvov, who served in, not just in Western Ukraine, but Kiev, says that the Jewish genocide in Ukraine is worse psychologically than the Soviet version, because at least we knew that the Bolsheviks were anti-Orthodox, that they were materialists, that they were atheists. Now, in the beginning, that wasn't made clear. You know, when they actually ran for elections prior to the revolution, they would make up stories about what they believed. But it became clear over time. So, along with Constantinople, the West, the CIA, and Kiev came up with this, what we call the pseudo-Orthodox simulacrum, the new version of the UAOC, the Unification Church, which remains a mystery to a lot of people. And for those of you who've been listening to me for a long time, there were certain groups in the UAOC that I didn't mind. Several of them consecrated true Orthodox groups in Russia. If you go back to my, after Voice of Reason, but I have a lot back then on this question. But remember, any criminal system does base its acts, its violence, on some formal law, or at least a pretext. Even the Soviets, their initial persecution of the church was to melt down the gold and sell off icons and things to alleviate the famine that they created. Now the Jews in Kiev they do have a legislative foundation for their persecution. We'll see in a little bit, so does the EU. Now the Foreign Ministry's report talks about Zelensky's, again, you're calling it unconstitutional. What does he care about the Ukrainian constitution? That couldn't be any less relevant. But it says, in 2022, 12 bishops of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church were deprived of Ukrainian citizenship, and it is proposed to forcibly expel them from the country. Contrary to the Constitution of Ukraine, which prohibits the deprivation of citizenship or the expulsion of citizens from the country. And that's Article 25. Well, that's true from a strictly legal point of view, but that it implies that these people give a damn about a constitution. It's about the last thing that matters to these people, especially during wartime. There's a laundry list of bills. As of June of 2023, so it's not that long ago, there were 9 bills became law directed against the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, registered in the Rukov Narada. And it says, the initiators do not hide the fact that their goal is to infringe on the rights of communities and believers of this denomination, to forcibly confiscate its property, to deprive it of historical and its legal name, to prohibit it from calling itself Orthodox, and finally, to deprive it of the opportunity to operate on the territory of the country. Well, that's certainly true. It's very diplomatic, but it's very true. This is an attempt, as that icon shows, to destroy Orthodoxy. This pseudo-Orthodox simulacrum is beyond ecumenical, beyond liberal. Now, these laws we're talking about, early 2023, actually January 19th, it was Bill A371 on amendments to certain laws of Ukraine regarding the activities of religious organizations in Ukraine. And then from that, 7204, which was in March of 2022, simply called on the ban of the Moscow Patriarchate from the territory of Ukraine. Then 7213 on March 26th, on amendments to the law of Ukraine on freedom of conscience and religious organizations to ban the activities of religious organizations. Now, you notice the dates here, there's no coincidence. And they were draft laws at the time, they're laws now. They were banned, as well as opposition parties and opposition newspapers and everything else, opposition being Russian or rational or anything like that. And that means that they had their property confiscated, their communities were liquidated, all their sacred sites, churches, monasteries. And it's still, I tried to forget it, but we know what happened at the Kiev Caves. The Kiev-Pechersk Lavra, the oldest Russian sacred site. And they're well aware that this is the main symbol of Holy Russia. Under Poroshenko, there was at least an attempt to observe formalities in the seizure of Orthodox churches. By, you know, the UAOC, but not the ones that I used to talk about. These are people that they controlled entirely. So-called alternative communities. These people were far from the church, many of them not Christians at all. And Zelensky, who you know, if you recall, came to power on keeping the peace, that was his mindless slogan, which he had no intention of maintaining, is, you know, went the step further and actually banned it. The institution that's involved in enforcement is the Security Service of Ukraine, the SBU. There you have actual violence against the diocese, monasteries, and parishes. And the Foreign Ministry report goes on, many dozens of examples of all kinds of weird illegal searches, detentions, interrogations, and torture as part of their counterintelligence activities. So they're claiming that this has something to do with national security. Now, what the report says is this. Despite the massive scale of these searches, which covered all the dioceses of the UOC, the evidence presented to the public was limited to theological, liturgical, and historical literature in Russian or forged propaganda leaflets. In some cases, the materials were planted in the presence of victims. And I know people who have actually seen that happen. As a result of this nonsense, you had criminal cases opened and pursued. Now, the former head of the SBU is Vasil Malnyuk. He said in April of 2023 that due to this, 61 criminal cases had already been opened, and very rapidly sentences have been handed down, so there's really no real process here. Then the report goes a bit deeper and starts talking about disappearances, kidnapping, evidence of torture and beatings and murder under very murky circumstances. When you involve something like the SBU, this is what you're going to get. But there's no question about it. March 9th, 2022, a group of armed men forcibly closed the Dukhansky Monastery of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. The abbot, very elderly, Archimandrite Titus, was beaten, kidnapped, and held by force for at least several days. local authorities and turned it over to their new alternative community. He was taken by unknown, and these armed men were not, they didn't identify themselves as being part of a law enforcement body. He was taken to deep into a forest and released with a demand never to return to Ivano-Frankivsk under the threat of death. Now, this man, Father Titus, is a genuine elder. The only thing he ever did was that he was opposed to the hostility towards Orthodoxy. He remained faithful to the Russian Church. He did everything he could to defend it from the attempts to seize it. Then again, on March 16th of 2022, our commanderite, Loris Berezovsky, was publicly beaten and kidnapped, again by armed masked men in Zhytomyr, were not in uniforms, and as far as anyone knows, now this may be out of date, but he is still missing. There was a trial of the 70-year-old writer and poet, Jan Taksyur, who had cancer during all of this, and he needed surgery during the investigation. In May of 2023, he was sentenced to 12 years in prison for treason under very murky circumstances, and that was under the Shevchenko Court in Kiev. He was taken to a pretrial detention center, you know, where he stayed. His conviction was a matter of course, and he was tortured there. He was tortured there because despite having cancer, he had no access to medical care. Then, I know I've mentioned him before, Metropolitan Pavel Lebed, who is a distinguished figure, one of the central figures of the Orthodox Church, and was the abbot of the Kiev Caves. He endured persecution for a long time, fully aware that, you know, the West was behind all of this. Remember, the SBU, Kiev, they don't function, especially in the early days of the war, they don't function as an independent actor. They never have. They were too dependent on Western financing for that. So he was charged with supervising and administering the Ukrainian Orthodox Church and the Moscow Patriarchate. He spent 2 months under house arrest. He had an ankle bracelet and all this nonsense. There was a very rapid hearing. His charges were vague. As I said, they're very vague, and I deliberately kept it that way. Something having to do with provoking religious discord. And not just sympathy for Russia, but the insinuation of sympathy for Russia. That's sufficient to bring him to trial. And of course, there was no trial. He was transferred from home detention to a village near Kiev, again, to another one of these pre-trial detention facilities, and his health deteriorated significantly. And he was very unhealthy because he was a diabetic. Now, so you had a cancer patient on the one side. Now you have a diabetic here. He had minimal connection with the outside world, and there was no guarantee, and I'm certain that nothing would be done about his diabetic condition. And the whole time he was in prison, more charges kept piling up. If you remember, a couple of years ago, his bail was set at around $900,000. Now, I'm pretty sure no one is going to be able to pony that up, in cash only, of course. And this is fully consistent with liberal democracy. Well, of course it is. This is an Orthodox church. You can't get any less liberal than that. This happened prior to the war, and of course, the war gave them an excuse to go even harsher on it. This is the thriving democracy here. But again, this is what a thriving democracy is. They're aware of this, of what looks like a contradiction. It's not. This is what liberalism is. Of course, all of this, both the Ukrainian and the American Constitution, would be laughable. But the beatings, being arrested by people without uniforms, all kinds of things, disappearances, and another, and enough video, the public examples of this have arisen, They've been taken off YouTube, but I saw them. They were sent to me when they first came out. I remember when there was a, again, this is like a year and a half ago. There was a an attempt to raise the money, but given Ukraine's money, the oligarchs are Jewish, that wasn't going to happen. This isn't a contradiction. Liberalism, liberal democracy, advanced capitalism loathes these people. These people are the very antipode to this. They're opposite. The opposition to liberalism is manifest in these people, or even Russia more generally. And don't forget the theft. No different than during the Civil War, the plunder of the holy relics from the Kiev caves. This was a huge organized crime heist, something along the lines of the Crusaders' pillage of Constantinople. Large numbers. I mean, there have been things I've been told have been sold on eBay. There are things that have been sent to museums in the West, the Vatican. Now, of course, the regime has their stupid explanation. For everything they do, they have a stupid explanation. And when I say stupid, I'm choosing my words carefully. It's deliberately stupid. It's almost as if, how low can we go before someone notices? They say, just like the Bolsheviks said, you know, this is about the famine that they created. Zelensky and his, and even in Poroshenko, but Zelensky in particular, and his allies say that this is for the good of the church. These sacred objects are being stolen to keep them away from the war, safety. Just like, you know, Greek artifacts from the Acropolis have been shipped to the British Museum for safekeeping. Now, years ago, maybe Cardinal Mecenti, he received a certain amount of attention. Maybe today, you know, every once in a while, you hear some Protestant, the Protestant weirdo CIA guy in Turkey. He gets some attention, and not as much anymore. But people like Lindsey Graham and Mike Pence, they're well aware of what this is, of what the agenda is, what words actually really mean. He refused to deal with Epifania, the head of the Ukrainian Unification Church, which all of this has been turned over to. This is a CIA Western institution created in Constantinople. The only thing that this man had to do to get out of all this was to join the Unification Church, which he refused. So that means he is opposed to European values. So, it was July 15th, 2023. It was the last day, it was a baptism of Rus, a major feast day. That was the last time Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus would celebrate that day on the same day. Of course, this is a huge, not just a religious issue, but cultural, historical. It emphasizes the common roots of the Rus people. And the baptism of Rus under Vladimir, that determined almost everything that came after and built was a foundation of Rus civilization. Now, of course, Jewish oligarchs, whether it be in the U.S., Western Europe, or in Ukraine, are at war with precisely that. Having them change the calendar is just like the day has great cultural and historical significance, so does the alteration of the calendar. Zelensky ordered that the date of this, well, everything, going to the new calendar and everything, and giving it a totally different meaning, using these kept intellectuals to provide information support for these things. And we'll get into here in a second, how they are now redefining, not just changing the date, but completely redefining what this means. Now, most of us know the U.S. State Department, the Patriarchate in Constantinople, back when Poroshenko was president, created this schism in the Ukrainian church in 2018, merged with the local unions. This is what I'm talking about, the simulacrum. It existed entirely as a political entity and had no real religious function. It engaged exclusively with political topics, the globalist agenda. It was meant to replace orthodoxy. And whether they have mobs or special services or the media, whatever they need, this is going to be enforced. And the criminal cases against Orthodox people are open to at least force some of them into this infernal institution. Someone called it a debaptism of Rus, or at least the part of Ukraine under his control. Now, I don't think that Zelensky is a buffoon. I mean, he is. He's a comedian, but he's a bit more than that. He used to mock Ukrainian nationalism. He playing the piano. He made jokes. You know, he never came off as having any brains at all. But as a Jew, this makes him very happy. Remember, he's a Russian speaker. He was installed to play the role of this religious reformer. And he is promoting himself as this almost like a Cyrus or a mosaic figure to reform the Ukrainian religious world. And this was long before Maidan. I was talking about this in 2004, 2005, long before any of us ever really heard of Zelensky. I said way back that it's not going to be long when the Russian language started to be pushed aside. Well, the church has to come very close to it. I thought it would be quicker, but they were in no hurry. They were very thorough about what they did. This alternative church, having Constantinople behind them, the CIA, it had a simulacrum of truth to it. They're creating yet another revolutionary new man in Ukraine to renounce his faith entirely and to loathe his brothers in great and white Russia. This church institution, so to speak, is saturated with the worst of Western liberal vices. The fact that this happened at the same time when certain drugs were legalized in Ukraine should not shock you. Now, let me read the official, this we call the OCU, this Unification Church. Here's how they now redefine the baptism of Rus under St. Vladimir. Now, get ready. If you haven't heard of this before, we will celebrate one of the most important events in the history of our country, the 1035th anniversary of the baptism of Ukraine Rus in the day of Ukrainian statehood. This event is truly extraordinary. We made our European choice more than 1,000 years ago when the Kievan state existed. And this is thanks to our Kievan Prince Vladimir the Great. And this choice, our history, our state, and in fact the very essence of our people, we must defend today from an aggressor that didn't even exist when Kiev was baptized. We need to know our history despite decades of concealment and censorship of the truth by Russia. They tried to steal our history too. In order to now say the event of baptism marked the beginning of Christian history of Rus. This is a lie, because Prince Vladimir of Kiev in 988 baptized the people of Kiev, not the Muscovites, baptized the Kievan state, not Rus, because it didn't exist at this time. And in place of the future formation, there were nothing but dense forests. This year, the day the baptism of Rus, Ukraine, will be celebrated for the last time on July 28th. We're still planning to switch to the new Julian calendar. So, the next 1036th anniversary of the baptism will be celebrated earlier on July 15th, respectively, as the day of remembrance of the Holy, equal to the Apostles, Grand Prince Vladimir. It would take hours to unpack the crap, the nonsense. I think it's skillfully worded, because there's a kernel of truth to this, but that kernel is not what they're talking about. This is this OCU, this unification, this is the mouthpiece of Jewish oligarchy. The very fact that they mention something like the European choice is an anachronism. It's laughable. Transitioning to the papal calendar. All of this. Of course, the point of all is to incite hatred towards anything Russian. This is a mythical. And I think in the broad sense is what we mean by myth. It's not just false. It's creating a story nonsense about the absence of Rus, you know, it can't be taken seriously. Before ascending the throne in Kiev, Holy Prince Vladimir first ruled Novgorod. Now, Moscow hadn't appeared at that time as a dominant place, but Novgorod was very close to it. His grandmother, St. Olga, came from Pskov, very close to it. She was a Muscovite. Founder of Moscow, Prince Yuri Dolgorukin, who was also Grand Duke of Kiev for a time. Well, he was a real Muscovite. One of their own academics, I think his name is Pavel Tolochka, he said he had to shut his mouth after this, but this is, after reading this, he said this: in the times of Kiev and Rus, there was no Ukraine. The Uchichi, the tribe, could not have imagined their worst nightmare, that one of them would be Ukrainian, another Belarusian, another Russian. They were simply Rus, Uchichi. And it is funny, when they say that Vladimir Monomakh was Ukrainian, his son Yuli Dolgorukin and his grandson Andrei Bogolubsky, were both pure-blooded Muscovites. Now, he said this, and of course he's right, but you can get charged for treason for this. He did have to retract his words. Any holiday, any so-called feast day, gets redefined in this way. You notice in these descriptions, Christ doesn't even show up. This is a purely political and secular understanding. The church is just a pretext for all of this. July 23rd is the feast day of the founder of the Kiev caves, St. Anthony. It was compiled by St. Demetrius of Rostov, which is, you know, Little Russian in origin. It was said at first that he labored for a long time in Mount Athos. The abbot of his monastery, impressed by his high spiritual life, ordered him to return to his homeland. And he was told, "Anthony, go back to the Russian land. May those living there prosper and be strengthened in the Christian faith through you." Now, here's how they try to rewrite this. Having spent many years on Athos, he returned to Ukraine on the advice of the abbot. St. Anthony the Kiev was purely Ukrainian, not Rus. You would have been very surprised to learn this. And at the end of their description, they say, "Our venerable Father Anthony, preserve, O servant of God, with your holy protection, all of us, and pray to God that your and our holy Lavra, having thrown off the yoke of the Russian world, will continue to flourish spiritually." I'm not sure, that's what this now official dominant Judaic church in Kiev is. How can you throw off the yoke of the Russian world from the monastery? This very concept appeared in Kiev, an ancient Russian city. In the monument, a great work of ancient Russian literature, word on the renovation of the Tithe Church in the 11th century, the Grand Prince of Kiev, Izyaslav Yaroslavich, praised the feat of the great St. Clement of Rome, said, "Not only in Rome, but everywhere, in Kherson, but also everywhere in the Russian world." And so on. It's one idiotic statement of these people after another. And the references to Rus, Russia, were everywhere at the time, including in Constantinople. This is pure propaganda, and censorship is supposed to be able to take care of the rest. This is a Judaization, not just a Ukrainianization. They have removed themselves from Orthodoxy. This has no connection to Orthodoxy. You could read their propaganda and never hear about the Trinity or anything. And it's everywhere. This is total, all-encompassing, nothing but propaganda. The media, education, culture, academia there, and of course, is being mirrored in the United States. And of course, there are laws now, as I just explained, against anyone who goes against this. This is liberal democracy in action. It's liberal democracy in action when you're right next to Russia, the very opposite of liberal democracy. Of course, Ukraine is now collapsed beyond fourth world status. These degenerates, intoxicated by propaganda and the newly legalized drugs there, seize the last Orthodox churches under their control. To think that Zelensky and the Jews around him were unaware that this is what was going on. They were behind it. This is Chabad's dream from the beginning. But I would say the spring of 2023 is where the open persecution and repression of the Orthodox Church in Ukraine began. Zelensky was a huge part of this. Now, he came in 2019, but when things began to build and the war began, everything changed. Orthodox churches by the dozen, if not more, seized and handed over to these weirdos. Clergy, any pro-Russian activity, that in and of itself is a crime. It doesn't have to be well-defined. Any activist on the Orthodox side are arrested. We know what happens to them. This is a deliberate and systematic campaign. This is what happens. Again, the Jewish mentality comes out in the same way, no matter what the circumstances are. And this comes from the revolution in Kiev, starting in 2004. Those of you who listened to me back then know how I discussed that. And that 10-year period built into the 2014 Maidan Revolution. But without that, there would have been none of this Fanar support of the OCU, no assault on Parishes or the Kiev Caves, no persecution of dissenters or anything like that. There were plenty of people within the Ukrainian church who could not tolerate this kind of thing. They couldn't influence anybody. They couldn't do much. This was a new Crimean war that was building, and I think they were well aware of it. But prior to the invasion, there were plenty of us who were very frustrated as to what Russia was capable of doing. If you remember, in 2014, the Western media claimed that Russia invaded the country more than once. And I remember laughing, saying, this is the first time there's been an invasion and no one has noticed it. It's simply a media invention. I think what they meant was the support of the militias in New Russia. But, none of this could have happened without these events. And these events occurred not only with the American support, but because you have Jews on both sides of the Atlantic. The Russian authorities had every right to begin a military action against a completely illegitimate government within illegitimate borders, deriving from the Bolsheviks. Yeah, they finally took military action. But I don't want people or the world to think, well, this is just a matter of the territorial expansion is just as a way to repel NATO. Well, that's true, but that's not the whole story. There's a certain right to this. Now, there's some authors who go on about the Sergianism thing and say that this is still going on in Ukraine. I've spoken about this phenomenon. It's far broader than just the Metropolitan himself from many years ago, Patriarch himself many years ago. But it's based some, more or less on the heresy that any power, any authority, well, I shouldn't say authority, anyone who's able to take over a country or a region and to rule it in one way or another, therefore derives from God, just from that very fact. That's not true. I've gone on and on about that in the past. But some of that mentality remains. It's very convenient, depending on who you are living under at the time. This occurred within the Soviet Church. I'm not judging anybody. I've said this 100 times. But my listeners, if you were there, if you faced what Sergius or people like that had to face, you'd be doing the same thing. You'd be marching up and down Red Square with a red flag because you knew where you would end up, where your family would end up. Maybe there's a few nuts out there who would have risked it or would have done, been murdered. Maybe. I don't know. But I dare say most of us would have extremely depressed, but went along with it. At least for our family, if not for ourselves. So I'm not judging them. That doesn't make it right, of course. Bringing up Sergius is, he's brought up too much as it is. But it does matter after the murder or the sacrifice of Tsar Nicholas, and the persecution of the Bolsheviks. The Bolsheviks they were Jewish, but they were early on, they were very ham-handed. They simply shot people. I've quoted Lenin and Trotsky saying this. Don't worry about legality. the surging idea that power in and of itself is something that comes from God, not authority, but power. Sergius himself, of course, was the deputy of the third locum tenens, Metropolitan Peter. That phrase irritates me, locum tenens. How many times do you read that in these things? But he was still alive in 1927. But Sergius began to act like a patriarch, usurping the power of a primate under conditions of an emergency. He replaced active resistance with servility and opportunism. Sergius came into power because so many others had been killed or in prison. Kirill of Kazan, who was shot in 1937, who was in prison at the time, Metropolitan Agafangel of Yaroslav. And Sergius forced him to renounce his position. Peter of Grutitsa, Polyansky, he was shot in 1937. Since these people were in prison or whatever, the very last of them appointed Sergius as his temporary deputy after the arrest of Metropolitan Peter. But in reality, after the arrest of Metropolitan Peter, the hierarchs of the Russian church should have gone over to Sobornost, self-government, according to the decree, after the arrest of Patriarch Tikhon, where he made it very clear that a centralized hierarchy may be impossible. Therefore, institutions like the Russian Orthodox Church in exile outside of Russia may be necessary, and of course they were necessary. And that was cited by people who opposed Metropolitan Sergius at the time. Yeah, the present situation in Ukraine, they're more psychological, but still the physical ham-handed element is still there. The death of all of those candidates that I've just mentioned, there's no more centralized authority. Sergius had no right to try to reconstitute centralization. But these attempts by the hierarchy of this unification UOC, and even worse, the Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine actually was so naive and stupid that they actually tried to appeal to Zelensky, the bloody clown. And that has something to do with the Sergius upbringing of some of these people. And that was a long time ago. I think we need to start de-emphasizing this. But the mentality is still there. I don't know if it's the naivete, desperation, or stupidity. But they actually appeal to Zelensky as if he was a Christian ruler, or a legitimate ruler, or a ruler at all. And he's talking about, you know, they appeal to him like he has no idea what's going on. They're complaining to him about the church being attacked in the media, baseless accusations, the situation at the Kiev caves. They say, we appeal to you as the head of state and guarantor of compliance with the norms of the Constitution of Ukraine to ensure the constitutional right to freedom of conscience and religion for believers of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church and to prevent the adoption of unconstitutional laws against the church, which are under consideration in the Rada of Ukraine, and to do everything necessary so that the clergy, monks, and believers of the UOC can continue to carry out their service in the Holy Dorm Mission, Kiev Caves Monastery. This is what I meant in the beginning when I said this is how you know when you're dealing with a normie, someone who doesn't fully understand how the world works, that somehow this kind of appeal would work, as if he doesn't know what's going on. You see this all the time. People complaining to the New York Times that they're whatever it is, anti-Christian or anti-nationalist, anti-whatever, as if they don't know that. But we don't really have to go back that far. October 15th, 2018, I did a show on this back then. Moscow Patriarchate. They were meeting in Minsk, severed relations with Constantinople. It's always, you know, better late than never, I guess. And Metropolitan Hilarion, at the time, that they had no other choice. And this had to do with the self-ordained UAPC and the so-called Kiev Patriarchate. I mean, the Constantinople Patriarch opened its Metochia in Kiev, terminated the 300-year-old decree on the unification of the Kiev Metropolitanate, which, by the way, had a lot of problems with it. I'm not saying that was anything worthwhile, but he's not a pope. So that means that Constantinople, this Masonic Fanar manhouse, has claimed the territory of Ukraine. This was a purely political victory, as always. And at the time, Russian church media, even secular media all over the place, was talking about this as this huge, huge schism. But it's not the first time that Constantinople supported the renovationists in Rus-Ukraine. Because it's not just against a jurisdiction. You need to stop thinking in terms of jurisdictions. It's directed against something far more fundamental. Historical self-awareness. Geopolitical integrity. And that's exactly what the CIA is involved. Now, it's very difficult for the Moscow Patriarchate, given its history, to say a whole lot about this. That doesn't mean they're not correct in this case and many other cases. We can worry about that when Russia's under assault from all sides. Keep in mind that prior to the fall of the monarchy, given Peter's Synod, trying to justify the canonical status of the Russian Orthodox Church after Peter was very difficult. I've been through that a million times. I have a book coming out on it. It's just as difficult for them to establish it as the Moscow Patriarchate could. But Bartholomew, in his role as the, you know, Istanbul Pope, I guess, announced the Ukrainian autocephaly. Moscow Patriarchate began to accuse him of things, exceeding administrative powers, interfering in the life of another church, etc. But of course you had the execrable Denisenko, so-called patriarch. Then you had Poroshenko and the State Department projected their own problems and said, well, the Moscow Patriarchate is merely politicizing the issue. Constantinople has been nothing but a curse concerning Russia over the last few centuries. They betrayed St. Tikhon in favor of renovationism, demanding that he recognize them. They imposed every kind of modernist reform you could think of. They lifted the anathema from Roman Catholics that I converted from, recognizing the Novus Ordo, not Pius V, recognizing the Novus Ordo as a sister church, ecumenical prayers with every weirdo group out there, and of course, fraternization with the Christ-hating Jews. After the Turks overthrew the Byzantine Empire, Constantinople had decayed and had become a parasitic influence. Very little of note came out of that patriarchate. The offices were bought and sold, not just the patriarchate, but everyone around them. And that didn't change. Freemasonry. Now, of course, now they're initiated way beyond Freemasonry, but you know, 150 years ago, Freemasonry is public knowledge now, has infiltrated everyone in the Fanar. Now, the Moscow Patriarchate, it's tough for them to complain because they had a part in it, including the recognition of the sacraments, the WCC, and all this nonsense. Now, only when this group touched on their administrative interests in Ukraine. Same thing in Estonia. But that doesn't mean they're wrong. To finally cut communication and communion with Constantinople, that's long overdue. It could help continue to purify the Moscow Patriarchate, which, of course, we all need purification, especially me. Now, what the Ukrainians have created is something that's purely political. When you talk about the literature so much of the Ukrainian autocephalists and this weirdo unification church, they don't deal with theology very much. The point is to act as a religious pseudo-spiritual justification for Atlantic integration. But it's not made any easier. when a year after that, this is April 18th, 2024, the Parliamentary Assembly, the Council of Europe, passed a resolution that went beyond all of this. The stuff that happened, whether it be in Ukraine or in Constantinople, was now justified by the most powerful oligarchs at the EU. This resolution, titled 2540, the need to counter the totalitarian regime of Vladimir Putin and his war on democracy. Now, I've read this thing. I read it back then. It's shockingly stupid. I think it's almost designed to be stupid. It's just one long cliche. It doesn't really say anything. It assumes what it's arguing. He's accused of everything from terrorism to the oppression of small nations, which really is hilarious when you're talking about the persecution of Russians in Ukraine and, of course, Israel. Russia was condemned in this document for liberating Crimea and Donbass, and, of course, for invasion of Georgia in 2008. God, even the European Union recognized Georgia as the problem in that war back then. Saakashvili has no friends, and he shouldn't have any friends. He's the one who killed the Russian peacekeepers there. But now everything's changed. The PACE, the Parliamentary Assembly, the Council of Europe, PACE, this resolution was the foundation of what became the ban on the Russian Orthodox Church, not just in Ukraine, but in the West, but certainly in Ukraine. These aren't exactly mandatory, but they do serve as a preparation. Like, for example, back in 2014, that same body demanded the introduction of sanctions against Russia under the same stupid pretext, and it didn't take long for them to be introduced by the European Commission and the governments of the U.S., Australia, Canada, etc. A year ago, here's what they said. The hierarchy of the Moscow Patriarchate of the Russian Orthodox Church, including Patriarch Kirill, defends the ideology of the Russian world, declaring the war against Ukraine and the satanic West, the holy war of all Russians, calling on Orthodox believers to sacrifice themselves for the sake of their country. The assembly is shocked by such abuse of religion and distortion of the Christian Orthodox tradition by the regime of Vladimir Putin, his proteges, and the hierarchy of the Moscow Patriarchate. The assembly condemns such rhetoric and emphasizes that incitement to commit crimes of aggression, genocide, and war crimes is in itself a crime. The Assembly calls on all states to regard Patriarch Kirill and the Russian Orthodox hierarchy as an ideological continuation of the regime of Putin, complicit in war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in the name of the Russian Federation and the ideology of what they call the Russian world. Someone wrote this, and it did it, I suppose they did it seriously. But this was the foundation of then the banning of the church in Ukraine, and it will be the foundation of banning of the church, even banning Russian media, like, Sputnik and RT have been banned in Western Europe. The Ministry of Internal Affairs in Estonia said the exact same thing. But this was a part of the de-Christianization, de-Orthodoxization of, well, obviously not, the West, but in Ukraine. Ukraine could go either way. Orthodoxy does not fit in the system of what we call European values, which is just the basis, human passions. It's hated by the European EU leaders, by BlackRock, by the oligarchy. These are Jews or people very close to the Jews. What people like me predicted 10 years ago is now a fact, because when we were talking about stuff like this 10, 15 years ago, everyone said this was crazy. It's never going to happen. How can they possibly do that? Carl Bildt, Minister of Foreign Affairs in Sweden, one of the architects of the EU's Eastern policy after 2014, said that Russia has changed for the worst. His new anti-Western and anti-decadent line is based on deeply conservative Orthodox ideas, which in and of itself, in his mind, is a crime. He actually believes, Bildt did, that Orthodoxy is the main threat to Western civilization. It wasn't a shock when everything began to hit the fan in Ukraine. Of course, this was around the time. Now, Bildt said what he said in 2014. But what happened, of course, 10 years later, was no shock to anybody. Priests are inherently, according to this, agents of the Kremlin. Not to mention, of course, when COVID hit, sanitary standards and all this kind of nonsense. Emmanuelis Zingeris, who is a Lithuanian, not really, he's a Jew, a member of the Siemas, who managed to participate in the separation of Lithuania from the USSR. The Sajudis, if you remember them back in the 90s. He at one time was a cog in the Soviet system, but he was an employee in the Kaunas History Museum. That was Marxist at one time, and he was a deputy of the Supreme Council of Lithuanian SSR. But when it became convenient, he then expressed his hatred for not the Soviet Union, but Russia. And he did this, as the years went on, for what he calls same-sex partnerships. This was the big issue. This is one of the Jews in Lithuania who connects the war with faggotry. This is what he means by totalitarianism and what the European Union means by that same thing, including the persecution of fags in Chechnya. Now, he tried to pretend he was a Jew, Catholic for a while. He's a Jew. He praised the Pope for his blessing of sodomy and or you know homosexual couples and everything else. Talking about Lithuania and elsewhere, he says, according to our constitution, same-sex couples must have a right to a family and their legal protection. These people are a part of our society and should not be discriminated against based on gender or orientation. A democratic state must ensure respect for the dignity of every person. I suppose the bowel movements during and after gay sex are included in this concept of dignity. I'm not sure. But his Jewish identity came out. He then became a fanatical supporter of Israeli nationalism, full support of the slaughter of children in Gaza, but condemns Patriarch Kirill for supporting the special military operation. This is perfectly normal. This is this maniacal Judaic persistence, their contempt of Russia and Rome. Homosexuality is, at its leadership levels, the movement is Judaic. As of a few years ago, every major group was run by Jews. I have the whole list on my hard drive. It's shocking. There's no other entity like that. So Orthodoxy is going to be replaced by these. This is beyond ecumenism. Ecumenism is such a trite thing now. This is way beyond that. Russians will come under attack for ethnicity, people like me, for sympathizing with them to one extent or another. And they'll do this all under the protection of freedom of religion and faggotry, I guess, their dignity. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.